Alright, time for another DoNotGod.com video presentation. So sometimes you feel like a video, sometimes you don't. Whatever. You know, making a video. Brain's kind of vague in terms of what you can expect from one at any one moment. The whole mood thing and the agenda engine of to desire. So I was sort of thinking about, you know, different times in my life where I wanted different things. And, you know, you can look in hindsight and you're like almost think of yourself as being kind of pathetic that such trivial things would inspire you or even complete you. You know, and, winning the small games rather than the bigger game and all that kind of stuff. And, it's just you really do change into a different person, even though, you know, the inside core motivating engine is the same, you know, me. It's a very different me who has to occupy that structure and, you know, move around in it. In terms of what you understand and how you perceive everything in the world, you know, people, everything, is different. Your perspective on what you're seeing and how important it is and what it means and what it represents and, you know, it's just a different world. It's like a You could almost apply it to like manners, and you know, you go to a different civilization or a different country, and they have a different way of doing things. And so, you know, you take your shoes off before you go in the house, and you know, they have rituals, and they might pray before they eat or some kind of, you know, and you'll indulge that kind of stuff, but it's it won't feel natural or. It won't be a part of your routine or your habit that you're kind of conditioned into. And, you know, even the what they eat, you know, you might not be able to eat it because it's like, ugh, you know. You haven't become accustomed to it as being part of the game you play. So anyway, so that's the tricky part of brains, you know, is that we can't just talk about adding up the digits and the pieces and the pixels and defining what's there. You know, how big is that square and how big is that square? And, you know, we can't just make it nice and simple and mechanical because superimposed on it or underlying it is all this kind of, you know, it's not chaos, but it's noisy and messy in terms of, you know, how you physically feel. You know, it's like I gotta have this tension. Yeah, it's hard to explain tension. Just this, you know, anxiety feeling, and so it just makes anything you're doing more difficult because you have this tension. You know, this noise inside the brain. You know, that's just distracting, and you know. Just ruins the function. So I can still say the words and I can still form the sentences and I still kind of know the agenda of the video, but yeah, there's, you know, it's like 30% of the function is lost to the fact that there's just this underlying, you know, uneasiness and unsettledness and feeling. So you have to feel good to do things, and you have to this and this and this, and, you know, lots of pieces that go into any kind of mission or project or bit of function. Now, that part of life, the mushy, every day is a new day kind of mush part of it, every day you got a different liability or problem or, you know, there's some other kind of noise in the system that you have to function around. Besides that, okay, the big picture, the basic project, what project your brain has chosen to be preoccupied by, to call the primary directive kind of thing where it's focused, all of that changes too. So, it just makes it really, it's just very messy trying to navigate the maze, and you're trying to get to a point. So I could say the point I want to get to is to have you understand, okay, that life is a lot more, there's more to you having a decent existence than you just saying, I had fun. That's really not enough, because of this whole problem that it's this multiplayer game and you're really responsible for the entire universe's function in a way. Okay, so there's ways we can do things in our lives that will, cure cancer. I mean, if I, there's could be some butterfly effect where if I throw this in the air and I land it inside a cup, that somehow cancer gets cured, and all kinds of different things happen because I was able to do this thing. And some is more direct than that. So some isn't just the fact that you have to not destroy the capacity for something good to happen by voting for Hitler or something. You also have to actually sometimes do something to participate in the process, of making something happen. You have to make a more direct contribution than not just getting in the way. Some good things aren't going to happen unless somebody really, does it on purpose, understanding the bigger picture. I guess you could argue that with some people in a war, since it's Memorial Day type, timing, who are just motivated by the small project of kill Nazis, and they don't really get into the politics. They just know this is their job. They go shoot these fuckers and then they can go home. So, and then other people probably could understand there was more to the politics and that these Nazis were dangerous and they were going to make us live in cages and blah, 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 or some other kind of bullshit. And, and then, just based on what people's knowledge was. And then, how many of the soldiers actually knew that the Nazis had, enslaved, in a sense, the Jewish population and others, and sentenced them to a slow and miserable death and blah, blah, blah. How many knew, there's all these different causes that all these different individuals are fighting for this one end, and the end meant something different to each one. And, that's sort of the part of, again, that's this abstractness. I mean, we can't just look out the window and describe what we see, because everybody's window is a different, it's got all kinds of different filters on top of it. And there's no point in me saying, well, it's next to the red car, because to them, the red car is, a red pond, and maybe it's distorted in some other way where it's not the same color. And so you have to kind of take all that information and try to convey that, you're seeing that part wrong, or you're seeing that part wrong, blah, blah, blah. So that's, the complexity of this. So, yes, so now my brain has this agenda of this bigger goal of trying to make this positive change in how people interpret the world so they can see the actual horror and bad parts and they can help direct the path, of the human beings to this better outcome where a whole bunch of them aren't tortured unnecessarily. And likewise, the animals even being a bigger context. So, it's not like at the war, some people could be fighting because they care about some human problem, and then some people could be fighting because they care about some life on Earth problem, some bigger, they're worried for a bigger community. So some can have a smaller agenda and some can have a more expansive. I guess that would be a better, not smaller and bigger. It's more narrow and more expansive. It's difficult. So, sitting in that position, I try to explain simple things to start with, in the sense that these are sort of things I wish it would have been nice if philosophers had already said all this kind of stuff in a nice, direct, hard way so people could understand it. So I've used the single player analogy, okay, because it's a video game analogy that people can sort of relate to, okay, that yes, you can understand the world as being something where it just matters what happens to you, because all the other stuff is virtually created. It's not real, and it can't be harmed. Or you can understand when you're playing the game that, you know, if you're only going to get points and you're only going to win, you know, based on how you use the other things in the game, and that if you abuse them or harm them, you lose points, and frankly, you know, the game is tied to your bank account, and they take money out of your bank account if you, do the wrong thing in the game. It's a different game you're playing. You're going to play it really different when you know the difference between a game that's just about how do you feel and how are you doing, and understanding that the game really is just brains, and all the brains have a basic equality in the sense of their basic elemental function is they can feel good and they can feel bad, and that the bad is innately bad. It's not, there's no good in it. It's just intrinsically not a good thing for a sentient feeling thing to be experiencing torturous, unpleasant, agonizing, tedious, negative sensations. And if you're going to be sensible, you kind of have to recognize that, yes, that's the real enemy. So if there was some kind of kernel thing, something we call the kernel, that's the core of bad, it's just a sentient brain feeling badly. And it doesn't matter whose brain is doing it, it's the bad feeling that's the enemy. So you could argue like it was a broken leg, as I have. I've metaphored it to just a broken leg, and you're just saying, it doesn't really matter who's experiencing the broken leg. It's a broken leg, it's a bad thing, it hurts, it's unpleasant, blah, 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 blah. And I'd have to be kind of ridiculous in how I viewed the world if I thought that somehow broken leg over there, isn't the same as broken leg over here. I mean, that's just not reasonable or sensible. And so being able to explain it's a multiplayer game, that shouldn't be that difficult, because, it should be, the evidence of its reality, the truth of it, is just so overwhelming that, there's absolutely no good reason to, no logic to, this idea that everybody's being presented a fake environment to live in with fake people in it. It's just not a viable interpretation of your situation. And the much more reasonable conclusion would be is that, no, you're just one among billions of other sentient humans, and then one among whatever the right number is, trillions of sentient brains that are going to be in conditions, and they're going to have fates, and those fates can be nasty or the fates can be pleasant. And the brain's dilemma, the problem to solve, is maximize the outcome, put the puzzle pieces together correctly, and make for the right thing to happen. And the right thing, again, can't just be about how do I feel and how am I doing. That's not going to be good enough as an answer to whether you succeed or fail. Now, obviously, it's in some way, on that small scale, in the narrow view, the very fact that you do well and that you feel comfortable is going to feel like you're winning. So that part's undeniably true. You're going to feel like a winner Like, it doesn't take much knowledge, much second thinking, okay, for even when you're feeling quite good, to recognize with some kind of respect, like on a Memorial Day, of recognizing that, wow, you know, a huge giant price was paid for this. So, looks like it's going to be, you know, a very nice weekend, very nice weather, very nice picnicking kind of stuff, all that kind of stuff people will do. And, you know, it should sort of be understood, the rational thing to understand was, is that all, whatever niceness you're getting out of it, you're getting out of it because of these gigantic sacrifices people made, some voluntarily and some involuntarily, that, you know, all this pain and suffering and torment and unpleasantness experienced by people, you know, even all the people who are just indirectly related, who lost their best friend or lost their brother or lost something really critical to their life, their father, you know, lots of things were lost to lots of people, and lots of bad things happened to a lot of people, you know, for you to be able to have this day, you know, where otherwise, you know, the world would look very different. Now, who knows, so many years later and all that kind of stuff, how different it would be, how big an idiocracy the other monstrous civilization would have created. And but there clearly was ethics and puzzle putting together that was just obviously evil, in terms of how it wasn't understanding the multiplayer game part at all, and decided some players could be brutally mistreated and it was okay. So, I mean, it's obviously that system wouldn't create much of a civilization. But, you know, in hindsight, what we have done, what the survivors did with the reins that they were controlling, the car, they didn't wax it, they didn't oil it, they didn't take care of the civilization they were handed. So their civilization was preserved the American way, and they turned that into a crass and corrupt and, you know, disco-ing, silly, trivial, disgusting, dirty, shitty world. Yeah, they created they let the civilization go to shit. So even though people died for it, it's just, you know, fact that, you know, the survivors weren't the same kind of character people, and they let it all go to hell. Frankly, just disgustingly gross, greedy, selfish, lying bastards. You know, let the biggest liar win. Really, really, really bad. So anyway, but that's a pretty simple statement about, okay, there's the context of your existence. Okay, so I've pointed out before, I mean, I really shouldn't have to explain, there's no God, you know, there's no master programmer, you know, creating your simulation or whatever. It's just a mechanical process. We're sentient because it works as a survival strategy. It's an evolutionary strategy to create these machines that are a little bit more complicated and do more complicated things. And, you know, the universe creates both. It creates the simple crocodile and it creates the more elaborate minky. And because both can capitalize on the environment and excrete an existence off of it, you know, take more and essentially, you know, steal enough eggs. You know, I don't know. You know, it's just all kind of disgusting. I mean, it's all parasitic, and, you know, there's nothing, you know, even the sophisticated organisms are really doing a very unsophisticated thing in terms of extracting their existence from just basically stealing from something else's existence. And all of that is, decidedly negative. But anyway, so there's no context besides just the fact that we're here. We can understand that, you know, it's been, you know, millions of years of evolution from when we were all just the mammals were, you know, dogs or whatever, you know, whatever, some lower form. Human beings for literally, you know, millions of years. Look, just think of the fact that it took hundreds of thousands of years to go from being able to control fire, for example, to, you know, having a, building a car. I mean, it took, you know, hundreds of thousands of years to get that brain tweaked, you know, to get what we are to that point. And it really just mostly had to do with language, you know, and controlling how something acquires their participation. So you could take a human being from 200,000 years ago and he could graduate high school. I mean, he might not be some cum laude thingy, you know, he might not be the best, but he'll graduate. Yeah. And, you know, it's part of the context of just recognizing how much has been paid, not only in, you know, World War One and World War Two, but you have to go, you know, the war that humans have been fighting for, the thing called the survival of their perpetuation of their existence and their civilization. That war has been fought for a very, very long time. And again, the just the enormity of the price paid for every bit of knowledge acquired. You know, hundreds of thousands of years of brutal death and all kinds of just really horrible stories. And that's what today is made out of. And your opportunities here on Earth. Really, really enormous price paid. And there's every prospect looking at the future that we haven't created a balanced and sustainable system of organization, and that huge displacements are possible, that you know, crises can arise where millions of lives will be disrupted in a, you know, from one week to another. Events will take place that will be, you know, catastrophic in their the toll in human torment. And certainly, again, if you understand that it's not just about how humans feel, it's about how all the little other brainy-abled organisms are functioning, that the scale of that negative just gets quite enormous. So that's where, you know, it starts to turn into an anti-natalism conversation rather than just a philosophical one about what it is to be alive and human. So I should be able to argue just this basic alive and human argument that, yeah, what do you do with your brain? Your brain's just a scheming machine, really. It's just a problem-solving, a puzzle-solving machine. And unfortunately, the impulse of the body, the brain-body mechanism, is well-conditioned into prioritizing the stuff important to you feeling better. And those projects, like how do I get to the candy jar, you know, up on the shelf, they were still sort of preoccupied by these in my personal environment, tangible, if I can just get rid of this tension, right? So if there was some mechanism that I knew worked to get rid of it, to make it go away, instead of making this video, I would be pursuing that puzzle. I would be trying to figure out how to solve that maze, because I'm selfish, and I would be saying, oh yeah, fuck all the rest of you fuckers, I need my tension relief. I need to get rid of this anxiety. You know, this vague feeling from nowhere, you know, producing no good thing, just making everything earthquakey inside. What do I need that for? Yeah, fuck that. But anyway, so that's what people live for, is in, you know, on different levels. So you can have it because you ate the wrong food last night. You can have an uneasiness for lots of reasons. Or you can have a real heart problem, like you have a real disease or sickness and you have to cure it and you have to get rid of it. And so you can be quite preoccupied with your own condition and in some respects quite, without anybody making any judgment. I mean, it's a perfectly rational to be distracted by just trying to get through the bullets that are aimed at you and not get shot, because you really can't do anything if you get defeated by this little crap that's sort of personal. So you have to be able to maintain your personal integrity before you can do some other project. But that's all the brain really is, though, is a problem solver. So if you don't have any personal problems, if you don't have any tension and crap and shit, then you can, you know, as the philosophers did, or other people who had some leisure time, so to speak, you can start speculating about bigger stories and bigger agendas and all that kind of stuff. And even if you're a regular human, you know, you can have your moments to look at the clouds and say, well, let's see if I can see anything in the clouds. Now, you might say to yourself, well, there's better things for me to do with my time than look at the clouds and see if I can find a rhinoceros up there. Maybe I should read a physics book, or maybe I should do this, or maybe I should do that, you know, something to make me more as a person, knowledgeable. I mean, I don't know the right word for that would be, without getting into some sort of elitist conversation. So it's not about becoming an elite. It's just about the fact that knowledge does empower you, and it empowers you to make more reasonable judgments about the world. It clarifies the glasses that you're looking through at the world, and it gives you a better ability to manipulate and thread needles and do all the stuff you need to do, because you're seeing the real world instead of this abstraction, this Picasso version of the world. You know, if you're using Picassos as x-rays, you're not going to be able to set any broken legs. You're going to make a mess out of it. So you need something that's less broken by the metaphorical abstractions, and under, you know, gets to the point, which is, yes, no God, just a biological machine. The fact is, the machine can feel good, feel bad. That's the only thing that's really going on, is brains feeling good and bad. And the idea is to minimize the amount of bad and to maximize the good. And the final statement would be, in terms of constructing a future, what is exactly the value of the good at all, and is it worth paying anything for? Is this car really worth killing people for, harming, hurting, torturing? And I would argue that if it's rationally thought through, that of course not. You don't torture anything, because it's really not necessary. Because all of the things that don't exist at this moment, all the brains that don't exist, don't need to exist. They're not in some kind of I need to exist state. So there's absolutely no one to rescue, okay, to pull into, you know, being alive. There doesn't need anybody, nobody needs to be pulled from being dead into I'm alive. It's exactly sort of the opposite dilemma. You just don't create a problem. You know, the simple solution is to leave where they are, because they're not in a bad place. And they could be in a very bad place if you drag them here on Earth. But you don't have to make that kind of, you don't have to go that far to recognize the simple truth that it's about brains. It's not a single player game. And in that same vein, I've pointed out that the future is gigantic compared to the present. So if we, as a bunch of present existers, are going to have a policy discussion, that policy, we have to allow the future to vote. That is, we have to create a voter whose agenda is the future, because a huge unrepresented state. Okay, it's a state of, you know, billions and billions and billions of people, and somehow we haven't given them any vote. Okay, and we're having discussions about their fate. And they don't have a say and are an advocate. So in a way, we could all understand that, yes, we have some obligation to recognize that every time we do something, you know, policy-wise, that's going to affect the future. The future obviously can't be here to, you know, defend what it thinks the outcome should be. That, you know, no, we should ban, you know, dogfighting and bullfighting and pointless gratuitous torture and murder and mayhem. That, whatever, this raping and pillaging is not a great ideal to parade for. Let's not have a parade to that. So, you know, that's a simple philosophical idea that I just, you don't read it in the philosophical books, which is sort of disappointing. I mean, it's not a bunch of great quotes about how giant the future is and how meagerly small and sacrificable the present is. And, you know, it should be something all the intellectuals are aware of, is that, oh, yeah, there's a huge bias here. For expedient and what's in it for me and what's in for us as the current livers, what's in it for us who will be here for 10 years, you know, that kind of crap has a huge bias in deciding what becomes our decision. And, you know, it's pretty easy to understand that bias and to recognize, oh, no, there needs to be somebody in the room who's arguing that, no, the future's really, really giant. And any tiny sacrifices you make here, you know, will be gigantic in the win over there. So you kill one person here, you squish them, yes, and you prevent 1 million people from being squished in the future. I mean, it's a 1,000,000 to 1 kind of value. I mean, why are you buying the, you know, insanely inefficient 1,000,000 squished humans when you could just simply choose, okay, the one squished human? So, so instead of borrowing the future's money, we actually should be investing in the future's bank account. We should be putting money in their bank account, not just spending on a credit card that has their name on it. All of the things we're doing that are just so obviously philosophically nonsensical. I mean, just trivially stupid and dumb. If you just recognize the simple truth that the future is gigantic and the present is a little tiny, you know, nothing. And that you have huge... It's the difference between the goose that lays the golden eggs and the eggs, right? I mean, you're saving the egg, you know, your current present egg, and letting the goose die. And it's probably not... It's not a perfect analogy, but the point is that, yes, the thing that has the real value, it's the baby in the bathwater. You're cherishing the bathwater, all right, and the baby's in the sewer, you know. It's just too stupid. It's almost so backward in terms of how people should be forced to accept their circumstance. And that's really what it is. It's not a pleasant or happy thought. And that's part of the problem, is there's a bunch of people controlling the thought medium, the idea medium, whose agenda is to keep people trivial and childish and irresponsible, because it's easy to sell candy and they just want to rot your brain and teeth. They just care about selling their product, and they don't really care about what's the consequence of selling this crap. They're all, you know, what's in it for me years. And all that matters is selling, sell, sell, sell. And it doesn't matter, will the future be able to survive what you're selling? Were all these nuclear power plants you sold for $10 work well enough not to destroy the very thing you were supposed to be preserving? So that's the complexity of the conversation, but again, it's made out of such simple elements that it's almost like, how could this fail to be understood by other people? That all, you know, I'm just sitting here advocating that you recognize your brain is a problem solver. The fact is that you don't have to spend all your time being fair and just and all that kind of crap. It's just the right thing to do. Is that now and then you have to be considering all the other brains, because they're in the game you're playing. And what you're doing with your little single shootering around is actually going to affect all of them and the future. And that the future is this big, giant, huge place. And you're rocking that boat. You're drilling holes in it, all right? And that's not going to be problem solving, that's problem making. So you're making problems, you're not solving problems. So you're sort of failing to utilize your brain correctly if you're making problems rather than solving problems. If you're eating the puzzle pieces, yeah, it's not, you know, you're not doing good enough. You're retarded, essentially. So it's not very complicated, right? Not a single-player game. The future is really gigantic. So it's just two little ideas there, right? They're just really little ones. The fact that it's about sentient brains, not just humans that are doing math, okay? Being able to do math doesn't make your brain feel more, okay? It's not a feeling enhancer or something. I mean, you know, these aren't hard ideas. And this really shouldn't be a difficult conversation to have with people about, hey, kind of obvious that, you know what, we should really be looking for some good reason, all right, to be imposing on a bunch of victims and just allowing people to force people to come here to solve their problems, to die in their wars. Is that ethical? Is it really ethical for you to, you know, create people so they can die in your war, the war you let happen, the war you basically caused because you couldn't pay attention to a few little details? Come on. Shouldn't be hard to, to be able to prove in court that, no, if you're defending that kind of behavior, you're an asshole, okay? And you should go to, like, whatever, asshole prison. Anyway, take a pause. Let's see where I go. Or see how I reorganize the simple statements. All right. Well, I had a thought, you know, that sort of simplified what I wanted to say in some respects, just in the sense of what I want to say at this moment in time, on this particular day. And it's that, again, that metaphor, too. This idea of appreciating the reality and appreciating the cost and the price. And, you know, it's actually the right time to do that because there's this holiday, okay, where people have absolutely no appreciation and spend very little time recognizing it. Now, I have to say, in the past, I did have some pieces of it, you know, because the silly parade people would do something, you know, that actually had some element of playing taps or had some recognition of it. This wasn't Survivor's Day, okay? It's not Survivor's Day. You're not celebrating the survivors. And they all get in their uniforms and talk about how great it was to be a survivor. You know, it's supposed to be, okay, some day of humility and you know, kind of morbid acknowledgement that somebody else has paid the price. And the fact is that, you know, if you think about the price, you're just saying it's an overwhelmingly, insanely expensive price. It's just such a high fucking price. And it's just depressing because, wow, how are we ever going to sing and dance well enough to justify how much this play has cost? I mean, this play is so fucking expensive. What are we going to do, you know, to make it worth it? And so I did have a glimmer of that, you know, as a kid. I remember we were at some park, and there were some people playing the taps on the bugle and doing the little thing. And it got to me, so to speak, in the sense of, whoa, you know, this is the reality, okay? And, you know, the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier kind of thing, I guess it was another one. You know, it... The memorial flame thing, and you start, you know, all these little analogies and metaphors do have some value in terms of triggering, okay, some sense of shit. you know, you don't only get killed, but you don't get any medals, and you don't get, you know, they can't even find your body, and they have to just dump you in a, you know, they dump your, well, here's a piece of paper with his name on it. You know, throw that in the hole. Yuck. You know, it's pretty degrading and horrible, and yeah, and then you just kind of reflect on, shit, this is what, you know, you paid that for this car, okay, and you're just saying, what a fucking insane price to pay for this piece of shit, because nothing looks like it's working nearly good enough. Landing on the moon just popped into my head because my brain is arguing with me. Oh, yeah, it was good enough. We landed on the moon. Yes, but that's a moment, right? In context, okay, that's just more people doing their, human thing. And, oh, we have to do this and we're going to accomplish this and we're so great. And so all of that is kind of, trivial, by comparison. So I'm just saying that, if you really try to do the addition, it doesn't add up to much. And personally, I felt a little humiliated that I was such a selfish, conniving little cunt. And I'm saying they died for me? Oh, shit. What a mistake they made. Because I am not worth it, frankly. I had some feelings like that. I didn't think much of myself. I certainly didn't think I was doing the big picture any grand benefit. And I was barely keeping myself, out of the quicksand. And that's all I was sort of preoccupied with. It was keeping the crap off of me. keep running from the blob. And I was basically willing to push stuff, behind me, blob food. I was sort of willing to push people into the blob, to give me some more time to run away. I'm certainly not sitting here saying, do as I did, because no, I didn't do too well. And frankly, it is reasonable to say, this is about saying, it's about what's the truth. And the truth sits there for all of us. It doesn't just sit there for the people who fail to honor it. It just sits there, okay? I mean, I don't have to be a truth honorer to speak the truth. I guess I've sort of made that argument that you don't have to become a vegan or a vegetarian to simply admit that it's wrong for us to cause extraordinary amounts of torture to sentient organism for a food preference, because you like blue jelly beans, you're willing to torture things to have blue ones when you could just as well eat the pink ones that are for free, so to speak. That don't mean you have to torture anything. I mean, there's lots of perfectly good foods to eat that don't involve, tormenting a sentient brain. So you could just admit that fact and still say, I suck. I just can't get out of this bad habit. I can't endure any more pain. My threshold is too high. I can't endure any more discomfort. I'm already working as hard as I can to tolerate not, punching my neighbor in the face and, raping that hot chick down the street. I mean, I'm doing all the restraining I can of my animal nature, and I just can't add anything else to the list of modified behavior, because I'm already modified to the hilt. I'm already doing everything I can not to offend any of the snowflakes that are all over the fucking place. It really is. I'd almost, say, yeah, I feel your pain, buddy, because, it's getting to be really difficult to live on this planet, because all of these monsters, the other monsters moving around, really just aren't coming close to having a common theme running in their heads, right? Their motorcycles are too loud, their cars are too loud, they can't walk down the street with their, iPod on without sitting there blaring it to everybody else. What the fuck? They're singing a song. Why are they walking down the sidewalk, for fuck's sake? What is that crap? I don't need that. I don't have your musical taste. You can keep that private. Why don't you just keep that private? You put the little earbuds in. You can live in your own little world. You don't have to have it spill. You don't have to fart your diarrhea into other people's living rooms. These are just common things, and you're just saying, shit. So, yeah, life's difficult. will admit that. And the only argument I'm making is that, yeah, if we're going to talk about the truth, well, let's, it doesn't really cost you that much to tell the truth. I mean, come on, that's not that much work. Yes, it'll involve you having to accept you're not the greatest and you're not wonderful and you're not perfect and you're not a great person. Oh, so what? Okay, that's not that hard to get comfortable with. You're not number one. Okay, I can be something less than number one. You can still rationalize and saying you're doing a lot better than Adolf Hitler or, Manson or Bundy. You're doing better than child molesting psycho killers. So you can still find some reason to feel good about yourself. You always find somebody with a smaller penis. But let's just admit that, you're not worth it. You're not worth it, the horror that took place in any of the wars, let alone all of them. You're not even close to being worth it in your functionality, in your devotion, in your anything, So anyway, so yes, we have contrived a little social institution that, frankly, it really shouldn't be a holiday. Maybe you should go to work like 15 hours on Memorial Day. Maybe that should be like work twice as long day. Maybe it should be a thorn and it should be miserable, and just to give you some taste of the pain. But instead, they make it a holiday, and so everybody feels more better about their life and about this and that, and they go ahead and picnic on the grave, of people who paid really horrific prices for your luxury. And it's not very smart. So anyway, I suppose I would prefer there was no such thing as holidays, because they are just abusable. But anyway, I mean, just call them days off. Take a break day. We should have a few of those, without a doubt. Those are necessary breaks from the routine. Break the routine day. Yes, thank you. Let's have that. But there's no point in trying to put a philosophical message into it, because it's just going to get lost in the trivial convenience and the personal advantages, and it's not going to do what it's supposed to do, which is create the humility and the regret and the sadness and the motivating God damn it, we haven't paid our bills. We're finding out we have this huge debt, I forgot to pay that bill. And our impulse should be, it's not good of me. That's shoplifting. it's stealing. I shouldn't have, I got to pay for that. I can't steal from the past, so to speak. Steal something else's sacrifice and some reason to be motivated to do better. Try harder to use that tool to motivate the pieces of you to go. So that sort of came up in a little personal conversation thingy or interaction where somebody was talking about the whole how to control the brain. And that's what controls it, is just how powerful you can make the bits of poison and the bits of heroin. trying to pull the monkey that's inside of you in a direction. And that's all you're really doing. I mean, I've sort of just metaphored it that way, is that our brain is just always got to have, everything's got to be approved by the monkey. So even doing the right thing, we have to make it fun for the monkey. Somehow it has to be interesting and intriguing and something the monkey wants to do. So we always have to reduce things to some sort of personal advantage. And the advantage being, in the case of me talking about debt, is a lot of people understand that, because they'd like to be clean. They like to be able to say, I did it, and they don't want somebody else's help to be part of it. that kind of thing. So some way to to and these are just psychological mechanisms. So I guess I could spend a half an hour just talking about all the ways soldiers died and all the families ruined and all the lives and all the destruction, the grandparents that ended up in, you know, the poorhouse and all the, you know, like I said, the people who whose lives were just totally ruined because they lost their best friend, frankly. And, you know, their just destiny wasn't as good as it would have been because they really needed that person. I could just keep treading in that and see if that can trigger something inside of you that would just say, okay, yeah, I get that. I got to make more out of my day. I got to do something for those people who lost everything so much, you know, and that I got to do this little bit of giving back because I have a huge debt. Yeah, so it's just trying to motivate you with guilt, motivate you with some sense of honor and integrity and responsibility and all that kind of crap, and that's all you can do to fuck with a monkey, to get yourself to push harder. Now, the negative works, but the positive works even better. So if you can create a banana for the monkey, like someday they'll have a parade for you. You know, it'll be your day, and everybody will be, the banners and the ticker tape parade, and blah, 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 blah. You know, you can try to describe some advantage you'll gain, you know, by paying attention to this obligation. So I could convert it into some sort of, you know, where, people will be impressed and they'll admire you and this will be a great way to network. And, you know, so I'll convince the monkey with some positive, you know, incentive to do the right thing. And of course, it's not really doing the right thing because you're still doing it for the wrong reason. And frankly, that's sort of what all these videos are about, is trying to figure out what the right reason is and the right thing to support and the right thing to defend. And it's to defend efficiency, you know. So if you can understand pain and suffering is bad, and you can understand that you want to have as little of it as possible, and then you can go that one step further and figure out, why are we buying bad cars in the first place? I mean, instead of trying to find the least lemon to buy, why don't we just not buy any car? Okay, then we won't have a lemon to worry about. We won't worry about trying to figure out who's going to rip us off the least. Let's just try not to get ripped off at all. Let's just not bother going to the store. And then we won't get ripped off. Yeah. Let's not step in the quicksand, and then we won't have to figure out how to make bridges out of the quicksand. You know, we won't have to figure out who to buy our quicksand insurance from if we don't step in the quicksand. That's what you can do with the conversation, is you can elevate it and, you know, keep moving it forward, and it will all of a sudden get to a point that seems so kind of obvious. Like, there's absolutely no good reason to pay any price for any song and dance. A song and dance just isn't worth it. So let's not bother pretending that anything the human beings are doing is anything meritorious or fantastic, because most of them are just stupid monkeys and they're just chasing bananas. And if they don't exist on Mars, it's a good thing. And if they don't exist on Earth, it's also a good thing. It's just a bunch of crap that just makes vulnerable. It makes torture possible, and it doesn't do anything else. Doesn't make a cure for any disease possible. It doesn't do anything positive. It only makes it possible for torture to happen. That's all it's got. And you say no to that because it's stupid. Make torture possible and do absolutely nothing else of value. Simple answer. Don't make torture possible. Bad idea. So actually, I think that's probably enough. Yeah, so I sort of leave it sort of connected to the day and the weekend. And, you know, it's in the spring, it's finally summer. This is such a reason to be completely disinterested in what the cause of the holiday is. But there is also really good reason for you to now and then give it a little bit of thought about the fact that it is a multiplayer game. And we have millions of years of human suffering to justify. Lots and lots of things have been tortured for this opportunity to be an intelligence on planet Earth. So, and what the fuck are you doing with your intelligence? Figuring out how to, you know, get her to take her clothes off. Is that it? I'll concede for most of my life that was it. Yeah, that's, you know, there wasn't much else going. There were all complex strategies that would just get me, in that driver's seat, and that was all that was important, and everything else was just a secondary part of the existent thing. And it really was that, sadly, trivial monkey behavior. All right, so, I think I'll call that a video. So, happy holiday. Yeah, now, tenuously... slightly uncomfortable holiday, maybe. Appropriately dissident holiday, you know, where you just have a little bit of disquiet. There's not something right about this picture, that kind of holiday. It's okay, it's good, but it's, I think there's a problem. There's a taint to it of some kind. There's a string attached. Some little thought that might just make you think. I'll just acknowledge there's more to this book. I just don't want to read the pages. So it's okay to say, I don't want to read the pages. But just acknowledge that the pages are there. There's a bigger story, okay? And you're just pretending the story is, hi, I wrote a book for you. Because you're so special, and you read that page, but you didn't read any of the other pages. And some recognition that the other pages probably aren't saying things like that. They're probably saying things like, God, you smell of vomit. Okay, so that's probably enough now. Yeah. So till the next time and such and so forth and whatnot. This has been a DoNotGod.com video presentation. And such.